You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, and this is episode 367 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Well, with some exciting news coming up, is that while this podcast is going out, I am writing articles about a recent trip up to the border with Venezuela, to the border city, Colombian side, Cúcuta. Well, I'll be looking at the humanitarian response to the continuing crisis with Venezuelan migrants, the Brazilian strain of COVID-19, which is up there, and various other articles and stories, which I can't tell you about just yet because I've kind of got them under wraps, but they'll be out soon enough and I'll share them with all of you. So that's quite exciting to share with you here. Of course, I'm grateful to all of you who've been active on the Patreon campaign, sponsoring us for as little as $2 a month and as much as $75 a month. So I'm really, really, I'm flattered that people would want to, promote and, of course, support the Columbia Calling podcast. How did you find last week's episode? I was pretty pleased with it myself. Episode 366 with Angela Maria Carreño of Children Change Colombia. Again, I'm a trustee of that NGO. Very small, the money goes to the projects, and I believe very strongly in what they do around Colombia. So check out the website, childrenchangecolombia.org. Today's show is quite special as well. I would say actually quite special. It's incredibly special, episode 367, because it's an opportunity for us to welcome back one of the first interviewees on the podcast way back in 2013. I think she was episode 23. Her name's Sabrina Priolo. She's Italian. When we had her on, she was talking about the Hilo Sagrado, which was her foundation helping empower women in the Guajira Peninsula area, so the Wayuu indigenous women and their artesanías, the mochilas and so on that they so expertly weave. But this time, so much has happened in her life, totally tragic and totally horrific. I mean, unthinkable things have happened, but somehow and through tenacity and positivity and therapy, she's come through on the other side. And so we're talking to her today in Zambia. So yes, a lot has happened in the 7-8 years since we last spoke. But we're talking to her today in Zambia, and due to events which occurred in her life, and I'm not going to explain them here because they're absolutely horrific, and she will speak about them if it's in her nature to speak about them, and you just need to Google her name and maybe Google attack on a UN or USAID funded camp in South Sudan several years ago, and you'll find out what happened. But she has managed to come out the other side into 2021 with a positivity and having set up her own coaching scheme for, well, not only to empower women, but also to provide therapy and training for humanitarian aid workers. And I think the psychosocial element of this is incredibly necessary and very underdeveloped for these entities and these organizations. So we talked to Sabrina, who from her own experiences has been able to move forward and is helping others. And, you know, and of course, her life in Colombia, her life in South Sudan, her life in Peru, her life in Zambia have all, they've all intertwined to create what she is today. So I know you're going to enjoy this show. It is horrific at parts, but at the same time, there is an uplifting message behind it all. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you in advance to Sabrina for sharing her story with us. And of course, look us up on Patreon, Columbia Calling, and sponsor the podcast and ensure its viability for these months and years to come. Thank you again, and bye-bye. And we're back. This is the third segment of episode 367 of the Columbia Calling podcast. It seems a bit unreal that we are here into episode 367 because back in 2013, when I was a novice podcaster, I had this guest, the guest who will be on right now, on I think episode 23. Her name is Sabrina Prioli, and basically she was here in Colombia. She did some work, I know, for the NGO War Child, obviously helping with children, I guess, at-risk children and children who have been victims of violence and so on here in Colombia. She was also, I think, the director of Hilo Sagrado, or at least one of the organizers of Hilo Sagrado, which was an empowerment kind of entity, helping Guajira, Wayu women get their products and traditional original projects products out into, you know, the international market, and then the money would go back into social projects, I think, up in the Guajira. And it was a great conversation. But since then, Sabrina has been in Peru, and then in various countries in Africa. There's been some experiences that she will talk about. But now we're talking to her in Zambia, which is the most crazy thing. I think this might be the first call between Colombia and Zambia ever. So, Sabrina, thank you so much for agreeing to come back on the podcast.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, because, you know, since 2013, this is great that we meet each other again.
it's bizarre. It's bizarre. And I was looking back through it, and I listened to a bit of it, and I was like, God, I was awful back then and talking about these things. But, you know, rather than reflect on this, it's wonderful to have you on the show. It's wonderful to be talking to you. And I remember your house, I think it was in Teusaquillo, just filled with YU bags. I mean, filled. And I think actually my wife Alba bought like two.
Was it La Soledad? Do you remember La Soledad?
Yes, yeah. That's it, Soledad. Yeah, I remember it. It was a great house. I mean, you had the sun trap and everything else. And you know, it was a very, enjoyable lifestyle here. But then, so tell us what after Colombia you went to Peru, and who were you working with in Peru?
So during the period I was in Peru, I was working as a consultant, because I worked for different NGOs and private company as a specialized in monitoring evaluations, so planning, monitoring and evaluation. So during the period in Peru, I still was working in Colombia for different program, and I was working for a World Food Program too. So I was working in different region of Colombia, like Vaupés, Chocó, Buenaventura. And so then I moved to Peru because my husband got a job in Peru. So I moved also in Lima, and I continue my work as a consultant. Yeah. And so for different company also in Peru.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's been amazing.
But usually for, yeah, sorry.
It's okay. It's all right. The dog's bark. Mine's sick today, so he's not barking. But always in monitoring and evaluation, always in consultancy, always with NGOs and humanitarian outfits.
Yes. I worked as a planning, monitoring, evaluation specialist. And of course, in Colombia, I worked with child soldiers. Mm-hmm. So in project regarding psychosocial support, education and protection. And I worked, of course, with women in project of empowerment of women.
Okay. Well, your dog, is this the dog that I met in Colombia as well?
Yes, he's a Colombian dog.
Hence, he's barking away in the background. I think he knows. He knows that I'm in Colombia. So, but let's not trivialize. I think it's amazing that, you know, you worked in all of these things. And of course, this takes you around the world. And I know I have a lot of listeners who work in humanitarian projects, aid projects. All of your time in Colombia, we worked with child soldiers and, of course, monitoring and evaluation up in Vaupés. I mean, amazing departments to work in, I think. But did you ever receive the necessary psychosocial help after, you know, you spend time with children who are telling you about the most horrific experiences or so on, are you getting the psychosocial help needed, let's say, after a project or during a project when you're working?
No, I didn't. Unfortunately, this is a problem of humanitarian workers because suffering from burnout, this is called for us burnout, is not a sign of, is a sign of weakness, lack of ability. So you need to be strong. You need to be active all the time if you want to work in this kind of sector. Mm-hmm. So it's like you are weak if you start to complain or you start to be tired or you start to be, you know, too much sad. And this is something that the NGOs has to be recognized because we usually work in really difficult context with victims of violence, victims of brutal and atrocity, abuse and crimes. And so we, in context where you don't have the possibility to have also social meeting, mm-hmm. the time for yourself to recover or time to go out. Or in this context, you can't go out. Easily, you have to be careful. You have to be at home. You have to be in your, in your hotel, and you don't have the possibility to talk with other people. So, and I'm talking in general, right? Yeah. It's not just global. I'm talking in general. For example, in Africa, especially in difficult contexts in Africa, you have to work in a compound. Mm. So you have really strong measures of security. So you can't go outside when you want. You can have a walk. So you are really in a... time by time, your mind gets sick, of course, and you don't have any kind of support. Yeah. You can't walk, you can't talk. Sometimes just talking, it's enough for a humanitarian worker is in this trouble.
But so you're in what is essentially a physical cage and a mental cage. I mean, this is the thing. You can't go for a walk. You can't clear your head. You can't use what would be, let's say, comforts, maybe if you're from Europe or North America, the sort of, I don't know what your comforts would be. In England, I suppose it would be going to the pub and talking to your friends or actually, but you don't have that. And I imagine in these compounds, it's pretty basic as well.
Yes, exactly. And another problem is that the aid worker, they are always in a kind of alarm. They live in a sense of alarm every time. So they have to be ready for everything. They have to be ready for everything can happen, but also ready for emergence. Mm-hmm. So you are always in emergence. And so this is something that in a certain point, a human being can't deal with that all day. You know, it comes a time that you can't. Mm. So there is a physical an emotional exhaustion. Mm. There is you can be cynic. There is also a kind of cynicism. You can start to have a lack of unsatisfaction also for your work. There is also sometimes lack of role clarity in this kind of work because you know, at a certain point you have to do everything. For example, I'm specialized in monitoring and evaluation, but I had to do also other things. Or, for example, also risk management or other kind of work. So there is a lack of responsibility sometimes. An accumulation of distress.
Yeah.
And so this is something that come and became, you burn yourself. This is the burnout.
But as you say, accumulation of stress, this pressure on a human being. And Yeah, I guess to get into humanitarian work and aid work, of course, you go through various interviews and psychological or some training, maybe back in or Spain or France or Italy or England or the United States. But it doesn't prepare you in any way for what you will see on the ground. And as you say, this it's 100% alarm, a state of emergency the whole time. I don't know how people can you know, bear this. And so, I mean, if we go into a bit of your experiences, and this is, you know, one of the reasons that we're talking is that you have a vast amount of experience in different locations of the world. And over time, and now as we talk in 2021, and we're all suffering from trauma. I mean, and I think Colombia, even prior to the pandemic, the whole country has a post-traumatic stress disorder. I think, you know, 64 years of conflict, and conflict that has been so embedded in the national psyche. I think there's a trauma here that is very, very deep. And of course, you know, we look at the ex-guerrillas, the ex-FARC in their zonas de transición or whatever they're called now, we know that they're not receiving enough psychosocial help. And we know that even the let's say paramilitaries who turned themselves in or surrendered or, you know, whatever they did back in 2002, I want to say, no, later than that, 2006, 2007, they aren't receiving it. They're still not receiving the necessary care. But I mean, you are now a humanitarian and aid worker coach and professional. You've got your accreditation in order to provide this kind of psychosocial care. That's right.
Yes, I'm a professional coactive coach, and I'm an accredited, I'm an ACC coach, and I made different specialization in positive intelligence, to work the saboteurs and the negative emotions and transforming positive emotions. And I also did an interesting course in coaching trauma, because coach usually doesn't work a trauma. Is not the coach is not a psychotherapist. Is a person who accompany people to get back in their life. You know. Okay. So coaching help people to reconnect themselves with their values, mm-hmm. their purpose of life, and so they, you know, in this way they receive the strength. The power to get back in what they really want in their life. And this is really helping me also, helped me a lot coaching after a trauma I had in South Sudan while I was working as a aid worker. And so my coaching help to prevent the burnout in accompanies aid workers in difficult field to feel empowered, fiercely taking care of themselves and themselves and others. First of all, themselves, and then they can also help others, because if you can help yourself, you can't help other people. And so building a muscle of mental fitness, because one of the problems of the humanitarian worker is that they are stuck in their negative emotions, and they also forget not only to do exercise and think to take care of yourself, but they are stuck in these negative emotions, and so it's important to understand how mental fitness, this is a specific technique, can help you to really reconnect with your life, with your life, with your emotions, with your purpose. And I also help humanitarian workers in their leadership, in the leadership in humanitarian workers, of course. So there are different techniques that I can't explain you now, but it's really powerful and really helpful, okay. I can tell.
Well, I was going to ask, an idea of a technique, but if you can't explain, it's okay. But I want to follow your course a bit again. So after Peru, where was your next port of call?
So after Peru, while I was in Peru, I accepted consulting in South Sudan. Mm-hmm. It was a USAID program. So I had to it was a program of monitoring evaluation. Mm-hmm. And so I went in Juba in 2016, July 2016. So I was, continuing my work as a consultant. Unfortunately, I was victim of a brutal assault because in 2016, while I was there working, a civil war suddenly started again, even if it was a peace moment, we were working in peace, in peace building. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this civil war happened suddenly. I was in a compound certified safe by the United Nations. I was far away. I mean, the United Nations, UNMISS, was just 1 kilometer far away from the compound. When the civil war started, me and other aid worker, in total, we were about 25, 30 humanitarian workers from every part of the world. We stayed in the compound. Nobody came to rescue us. And so we were in the middle of bombs and it was the war outside the compound. After 4 days, unfortunately, the military soldiers, the governmental soldiers, they came into the compound. They started to destroy the compound and they started to threaten us. Yeah. We were in the only building safe in a way that it was a bulletproof door. They started to threaten and they could come into the house because one of the windows was broken. So that's this is the UN compound certified. Yeah. So they came in and they killed the journalist. A South Sudanese journalist. One of my colleagues was shot in his legs. And me and other women were victim of sexual rape. We were raped. I was raped by 5 soldiers. I was beat very hard. I was tortured with a spray for mosquito. And I was left together with another colleague all night, all afternoon and all night in this compound. Even if it was the ceasefire, nobody came to rescue us. So that was horrible. Our government, my government, other American government, nobody denounced the crime. Neither our organizations. So that was something incredible, but nobody, that was a very important and terrific attack because the United Nations also admitted in an report that they refused to help us, not only us, also other civilians outside the UN compound. So, I decided, I suffered of course, post-traumatic stress, depression, but I didn't want to give up. So I started therapy, EMDR before. It's a technique for trauma. It's a technique specific for trauma. And then I realized little by little, you know, step by step, what really moved me and what really transformed myself in another Sabrina was also the sense of justice. I wanted justice. I couldn't accept the silence of the institutions, the silence of the government, the silence of our organizations. So I decided to fight for my justice and reparation. I was the only victim to come back in South Sudan and testify in front of my perpetrators. And I could open again a penal case of our case. In 2000, well, the story is really long, but it's also written in my book. In English is Rise Up Phoenix. But it's a long story. But in all this process, in all this story, I was left completely alone by the diplomacy, by the institution, by my organization. So I had to recover alone. And I decided to, a friend of mine told me to try the coaching, because after 2 years of therapy, you know, I was dealing, I was recovering, but I don't know, something missed in my life. I didn't have I didn't have any kind of perspective. I lost my job. I didn't want to work anymore in the humanitarian sector. I didn't trust anybody. I was like, but what's about my life? All my years of work, all my studies, all my life, where is my life? I couldn't recognize myself. So I started coaching and, discovered myself again. Well, I discovered the same Sabrina, but with another meaning of life, with another perspective, with another, because I now work with a lot of women that also had sexual abuse, sexual violence. So I accompany these women to get back of their life, to reach again their purpose of life. And so I'm so happy because I'm still helping, but in another way. Mm-hmm. So this is so important that women, all women, they had this terrible experience. They can find in the dark a light. Mm-hmm. And when you see the light, you want to reach this life. Nobody can stop you. So I help these women to see the light and go to this light. And so with people working in the humanitarian sector, it's the same, because they are, these kind of people are in the dark, and you can go out of the dark if you want, and if you really believe in yourself. So I'm really happy and proud of my strength and my power, because I won and they lost. I didn't want that they, the people they raped me, they didn't have to win.
I'm speechless, and I'm obviously had read about what happened to you. 2 years of therapy to undo, it doesn't undo, it's the wrong word. 2 years of therapy to unwrap the trauma and the depression that you're going through sounds to me like an incredibly short amount of time after the type of experience that you had, the mass rape, the gang rape, the torture, being left, I would assume, for dead. You were beaten as well in a compound, no one coming to help you. And that, I think that at the end is that there's no one. And as you said, no one has helped, and there was no one there. And you're next to someone who's been shot in the legs, and you're next to a journalist who's been assassinated, murdered right there. 2 years to me sounds like an incredibly short amount of time. And I'm talking to you here, and you're smiling, and you're upbeat, and you have a positivity to help other women from the strength and the depths of your experience. I am I am speechless. I am amazed. And at some point, I will read the book. And of course, you can get it, I think, on Amazon, Rise Up Phoenix, and it's in several languages. And I don't know how you come back from that, Sabrina. I don't know how you come back from that, because I would say that it's probably higher than 95% of people can't come back from that kind of trauma and that kind of violence and gender violence. And I don't know how you do it. I mean, I don't know where to go from here. There's a, you know, South, and you came back to South Sudan. I mean, that on itself, to come back to Juba and to attend the court and see the victimizers, the perpetrators of this. I mean, I can only assume that even boarding the flight to come back to South Sudan, there was a feeling in your body, in your gut. Can you just tell us a bit about this return to South Sudan?
Yeah, sure. It's of course, Richard, it was very, very strong. Of course, I mean, I was completely scared, and I didn't want to come back. And once I was there, what happened, that is also described in the book. Before to come into the court martial, I was outside. I was in the car. I was waiting that the perpetrators came into the military, came into the court martial. They were just 12, but they were more than 100 when they attacked the compound, but just 12 militaries were arrested. At a certain point, I was with my eyes closed. I was trying to do, you know, relaxing and meditation because to be calm. And at a certain point, my husband told me, Sabrina, you have to be ready because the soldiers are here. They came in. So now they are going to call you. So my heart starting to, it was a really bad moment, something that I couldn't, I thought, no, I can't. I was like losing my sense. I was like, then they called me. When I opened the door of this court martial, you can imagine it was just a small room, very small, with full of militaries and full of, it was a bit dark, you know, it was a bit. When I opened, the first thing that I felt, it was the smell. It was a flashback for me because I smelled the soldiers. And it was a flashback. And that moment I felt like, okay, I'm losing my, you know, I was falling down. But then I felt like, okay, no, Sabrina, you are here. They have to hear your voice, and not only your voice. You have the possibility to express the voice of thousands of women. They can't talk. Women, they can't stay here now because they don't have this possibility. So we have to be strong also for them. And believe me, Richard, I felt in my back like a big, I don't know, a power pushing me in this court martial. I came into and I was there. You know, the interrogation was for 6 hours. And I was completely, I don't know if I have to come back. I don't know if I'm, I could be there. I was so strong. I was very, because a person was translated for me in English and Arab, but I could listen all the words translated in English from Italian. And so I was really careful. No, you have to say that. I was for 6 hours. Then, of course, a lot of questions, ridiculous. Yeah. They try to make me feel like a bad woman. That question like, did you meet some of these soldiers before? Did you invite in your room one of these soldiers? Did you go out alone during these days? You know, these ridiculous questions that at a certain point I was the accuser.
Yeah, to destroy
but I was so strong that I you know, I explained exactly what happened without any kind of weakness. And then at a certain point, the judge told me, okay, can you recognize one of these soldiers? So I had to go close to my perpetrators, even if they were close. And also in this moment, I felt the same loneliness that I had when I was alone in this compound. But I told to myself, I don't have to be afraid now. They have to be afraid, not me. Because I'm here to talk for justice. They have to be afraid, not me. And so also in this case, I was strong. I recognized these soldiers. One of them was laughing in front of me. And it was the one of the captain who didn't rape him, but who beat me very hard and who ordered to rape me. And this captain died after 2 months after my witness, because I don't know. You can, you know, FBI was investigating who ordered this attack in the compound. And one of the person I recognized was the captain of the troop. And this person died. Who knows how? Yeah. And so,
go on.
No, I just want to say that the verdict was pronounced after 1 year. It was pronounced without the file record. This file record of the court martial is missed. We don't have the record. I can't appeal. The soldiers were, you know, someone was condemned from 5 years to the entire life for different crimes. They decided to give 2.5 million to the owner of the compound. And to me and to other victims who testified after remotely, they decided to give $4,000 and 52 cows to the family of the journalist killed. So, and 2.5 million to the owner of the compound. So something is...
there's something that doesn't connect there.
No.
I can't believe when I think about this and the $4,000 of compensation, I can't believe that feels like justice for you.
No. And in fact, I'm still fighting for reparation. Even if the problem is that I couldn't appeal in court, in Supreme Court, because the file is missed. So now I'm trying to, you know, in a kind of negotiation with the government of South Sudan. But you know, it's 2 years that I'm still waiting, and of course, again, without any diplomatic help. I didn't receive any legal assistance, any medical assistance. So that goes against different convention of Istanbul Protocol, you know, convention of the victim of tortures. There are so many conventions that are not respected by my government also.
Do you really think that there'll be reparations? Do you really hold out hope that the government of South Sudan will make an about face and say, yes, Sabrina Prioli, you can appeal, or the file's lost, but we need to make good, let's say, on what's... Do you really think anything will occur?
The fact is that the negotiation was proposed by the South Sudan government. Okay. I also signed 2 letters to the Minister of Justice to accept this ridiculous, in any case, negotiation, because it wasn't a real negotiation. I had to accept what they decided. In any case, I signed, but it's 2 years. I'm still waiting. They don't listen. They don't receive our call. My lawyer is trying everything. So what I want to say that without diplomatic help, Nothing is possible. And we, humanitarian workers, specialized, that we are working for peace, you know, to build peace, it's not, we don't deserve this kind of treatment. We don't deserve that. Because if I was a diplomatic person, I received all the necessary help, all the necessary assistance. But because I'm not representing Italy, or other people are not representing their country, they are treated in this shame way, because we are human beings. We have the same right of every person.
And okay, I mean this experience. Obviously, I mean, you know, you go back to Italy. I think you are Italian, and you go back to Italy, and you have your years of therapy, and you found this way forwards. You found this way despite no help from the diplomatic world, despite no help from the Italian. And of course, now everything is more, all of this, you know, documentation, court work is frozen because of the pandemic. Everything else is put to the back. But you've returned to Africa. I mean, I would think that the continent of Africa would be, you know, there would be a dark part of your heart, you know, saying, I can't go back to Africa. And, you know, Zambia is not an easy country either. You are a model of resilience and recovery for everyone. And I can only admire you. I personally would never have, I can say, I would never have been able to survive this. And again, I would say 99% of people couldn't. And you've written the book about it, which I imagine was therapeutic to go through the book.
Very therapeutic.
And you have the website, Sabrina Prioli. So if people want to get in touch with you and to have, you know, hear your way of helping and enabling people to recover, or at least, as you say, come towards the light once again from these dark places. I'm just I just don't know what to say, because I've never had a conversation with anyone who has been so very positive. And I just kind of want to ask, is changing the subject, but on the same subject, I mean, you must have read, because it must have made the news, it definitely made the news in Italy and here in Colombia, but there was a young man, an Italian man, who they said hung himself in, you know, committed suicide in San Vicente Caguan. Mario, I wrote it down, Mario Pacioli. And
Mario Pacioli.
Pacciola. And he didn't. I mean, I've got information. And he was working for a humanitarian, entity. And yet, okay, so they got all the other humanitarian workers from this entity out of San Vicente and the area, but I don't think they're receiving the kind of help needed, because one of their own is officially declared that he committed suicide. But, you know, in journalists and other circles, we have other information. How would you approach, without giving away your techniques, but how would you approach his colleagues to say, listen, I can help you?
Well, I think one way is to find the strength to go forward, and the strength to continue what they are doing. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the important thing is to recognize that every one of us has the energy and the power, the quality, the values, the resource. Every one of us has the resource to continue to deal. And so it's just the way to find this resource. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you understand which is your resource, and you can be more, you can be stronger and stronger, and don't give up, because this is the that was I also used for myself. Okay. I don't want to give up. I want to reconnect myself with myself, with my values. And another thing is to, you know, when a person think that there is nothing to do, that you don't believe anything, you don't believe to anyone, you don't believe, that's the moment also when I felt really depressed. I didn't believe in nothing. Also in nature, that I'm really passionate about nature. I'm a mountaineering and I find my resilience when I go in the mountain. But I also felt something negative also in the energy, in the nature. So can you imagine how I was depressed? But what really help people like me or like people that they don't believe in nothing anymore is to reconnect with the resonance of life. So you have to reconnect with something that you feel yourself resonant. Like, oh, this kind of vibration in yourself, they say, oh, wow, this is something that really let me feel something energy or something good that I can do and that I can make action, because that can let me, that these things feel me resonant in life. So this is the important thing. You have to find something that feel you the resonance of life, the vibration.
It's a way for you to guide these people to find that element.
Yeah. Maybe that element. The present.
Wow. Wow.
Everything is the values, you know, mm-hmm. The values that you have, the quality, and also see life in another perspective. Because when you think that everything is in one block, you don't see other perspective that of the same problem in different perspective. For example, you are stuck in a problem and you see just this problem. But if you see this problem in different perspectives, you have a different views of the problem. And then, yes, you can choose. Once you have the general perspective, the general view, then from your values, from your inner leader, then you can choose what you do. But when you are stuck in one block, in one problem, you don't see anything. You don't see yourself and you don't see the possibility solutions.
I think we could talk for hours, but unfortunately, we don't have enough time. But I would like to thank you so much for sharing perhaps, I mean, the most unbelievable, terrifying, and now uplifting. The result has been, after many years of therapy and so on, the result has been you've taken this to help others and to empower others. And, you know, we must only admire what you're doing. And I hope that this message gets out there to aid workers, humanitarian workers, people who are at risk of this. I mean, the most unbelievable, the most horrific trauma possible. And we're on Zoom and I've got your image up here, and you don't look like a person who's suffered trauma. You don't look like I would imagine. And I don't want to I don't want to diminish what's happened, minimize it. It's just, you know, between 2013 and now, so much has happened since we last spoke. And so I just going to say, people need to read your book. That's Rise Up Phoenix. And it's in Italian, it's in English. Is it in other languages?
It's in Italian, the original version is Il Viaggio della Fenice. Mm-hmm. And in English, it's Rise Up Phoenix. In Spanish, still I didn't translate.
It's on the way.
On the way, yes.
And then your website, Sabrina Prioli.
.com.
So for people to check it out. And of course, I will be putting all of this on Facebook and Instagram and everything else.
Yeah. Of course, I work also with Spanish and in Italian and in English. And I also do a lot of pro bono coaching for women that they can't afford and they have abuse or violence. And so I'm working also in this kind of project.
It's amazing. And as I said, I'm speechless, but so very thankful that we could
thank you, Richard.
Talk 8 years later, I guess it is eight yeah. years later, but and I wish under different circumstances, but I think that, you know, sharing this story is for me it's revealing, but sharing it to other people out there, hopefully we can help, you know, hopefully yeah. this message gets out there. So let me just take this moment to say thank you so much, Sabrina, for your time in Zambia.
And thank you. Thank you, Richard.
You're most welcome. It's been an absolute honor, a privilege, and just, the words do not describe it. And I hope to be able to, talk to you from another perspective in another continent, maybe in person yeah. when this all progresses. But thank you again. Check out Sabrina's website. It will be on the Facebook page and Instagram and so on. This has been episode 367 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I know you've enjoyed it. It has been shocking, breathtaking, uplifting. I'm going to sign off for today. I have no more words. Thank you for listening, everyone. Chorro y atar.